I had a different fuel that a lot of athletes use, which was probably a little bit of fear. And also, I understood very early that I was given an opportunity and a gift. Mm-hmm. And so what I was a worker. I was somebody who would train harder than anybody, yeah. And I was going to earn it.
Every Hall of Famer has experienced it. Every MVP has gone through it. Every All-Star has endured it. It is a unifying experience amongst all professional athletes, the perennial superstars, and the ones who couldn't quite grasp it. For some, it is a memory they hold dear and remember with great nostalgia. For others, it was a horror show they would love to forget. But for every single professional athlete, it's the one thing they all have in common. Rookie year.
Today's guest is Gabrielle Reese, and she's done it all. Gabby is an American professional volleyball player, writer, sports announcer, model, actor. During her time at Florida State University, Gabby led the league in kills 4 times, still holds a record for solo blocks and total blocks. Gabby went on to become captain of Team Lady Foot Locker, Team Nike, and the Women's Beach Volleyball League from 93 to 97. On top of it all, Gabby had the honor of being named Nike's first female representative and the first female to design a Nike shoe in 94. She's written 2 books, established renowned training programs with her husband, Laird Hamilton, and has graced the covers of Elle, Vogue, People, and Playboy magazine. Here to tell us about her journey, her success, and hardships, our guest, Gabrielle Reese. What a pleasure and honor to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Grew up always a huge fan of yours, so thank you for being here.
Thank you. That makes me very happy and makes me want to cry all at the same time.
No, not a small child.
Okay.
I'm getting older. I was talking to one of my friends. I'm like, gosh, man, like it happens quick.
It does. That's why you have to take advantage of every moment and also take care of yourself. Because it happens a lot easier when you take care of yourself.
Yeah. Give me the moment that, you know, you walk out and all the bright lights of being a professional.
You know, I have a really unglamorous story as a professional. See, unlike certain people, I played a very small sport. Uh-huh. And so I always called it the side hustle that you had to do to kind of pay for your habit of being a professional athlete.
Yeah.
And I think when people are in lifestyle sports, they understand exactly what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so you dedicate 90% of your time to your training and to traveling for competing. But for me, most of my income actually came from my side hustles.
Gotcha.
And so after I graduated Florida State, I hadn't really played much beach volleyball at all, mm-hmm. if in fact, any. And so I moved from Miami and I started training, like playing for fun, like something to do.
Yeah.
And after about a year and a half, I had a woman there say, you should turn pro, move to California and turn pro. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's when ignorance is on your side. And you're like, oh, okay. You
know? Yeah.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, right.
So I moved to California. And what happened is we had a doubles tour, 2-on-2 beach, but you also had opening up a 4-on-4.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still working in fashion to, it paid very well. And so I was still doing that. I had done that throughout college.
Mm-hmm.
So my first actual professional tournament was 2-on-2. Okay.
Yeah.
The month before I had been in Morocco working and taking pictures. Well, I had found out before I went to my first professional tournament that I had a parasite. Now,
wow.
I don't know if you know anything about parasites, but at times, you know, you need to be located near a restroom.
At all times.
Right. And so let's look at beach volleyball. You're in a bikini. Okay. I was very slender. I lost 10 pounds right before my first tournament.
Ugh.
And I went to, and I grew up in the Caribbean.
Okay.
And weirdly, my first tournament was in Puerto Rico, which I had family and friends there. And I was playing against an athlete because I was ranked, you know, 32nd out of 32.
Yeah.
And you play the number one seed. So there's a very famous player named Jackie Silva,
yeah.
who is so talented. So I am dealing with, I'm playing against Jackie Silva. I am praying to God that I don't have a mishap on the beach. And literally, like, you're jumping.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
you're hitting and blocking.
Yeah, and diving.
A lot of jumping.
Diving, lot
and
of
a bikini.
Jump. Yeah.
And so you're hoping that Imodium AD is a real thing and that it works. So to be honest, I almost think that it was a distraction from being nervous because I was managing so many other things.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if Jackie Silva broke a sweat. I might have been out of there in, like, you know, 16 minutes.
Just,
I think it was just a pound, a thunder.
Just got destroyed.
Yep. And so I think it was great because What can be so wonderful about that is you do have expectation, and there was expectation, and people are like, oh, let's see what the rookie has. Mm-hmm. But the other side of that is when the worst thing that can kind of happen, short of like you get injured, happens and you're like, I'm still here.
Yeah.
It's all kind of gravy after that.
I agree with that so much. I think that people are so scared of failure that it paralyzes them. I have so many friends that would rather not try than fail at it. And once you realize that, look, as long as I'm not going to die or get injured, if I lose or I'm terrible that night, I'll get through it. I'll get over it.
There's something really important in that. You know, I have my youngest daughter. I can say this freely. I'm her mother. At times, things come easy to her. And also, she can be a little bit sort of tough, like borderline bratty, right?
Yeah.
And I took her the other day. She rides horses. Now, I have other kids. My other two girls are like pretty brave, and they just do stuff. This kid is very analytical. Then she'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
And she got bucked off the horse and twice in 2 days. Okay. So she was afraid, which I understand. And I was sitting there as a parent, and it's sort of in their practice.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady was like, okay, you're going to get on and you're going to go do this. And I could see my kid was afraid.
Yeah.
Rightfully so. But the important thing was, is that she went and did it. And that's, I told my husband, it's like winning and losing is the child's play. Here's the real moment.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say, oh, sport or whatever, it's like, I'm afraid, I'm uncomfortable, I'm unsure of myself, and I'm still going to do it.
Exactly. I'm still going to go on there.
That's where it all happens. That's where the real stuff happens.
It's so funny you say that, because my 10-year-old, 11-year-old, she is the same way. If something is too hard at first, she's done.
Yep.
So you have to find the right way to introduce it to her, so that it's not that difficult. She, like this summer, she was doing swimming camp, because I think she could be, she's 5'5", wears like a 9.5 shoe. She's 10 years old.
Yeah, big flipper. So she's
going to be between 6'1 and 6'4". Like, sure. She's going to be tall.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you could be great at swimming. And I tried golf, and I introduced it the wrong way. So golf's out.
Yeah.
I tried tennis, still has a chance.
Yeah, tennis is great.
But like swimming, she hated it. I was like, just go to the camp. Because I know if I put her in practice, went to the camp, loved it. So now she wants to swim. But it's the same thing. If I introduce it to her the wrong way, she's done.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. And plus, parents, I don't care who you are and what your history is, we really don't know anything.
Nothing.
And so I really wish my kids would play volleyball, because volleyball's so fun.
Yeah.
But my middle plays tennis, and then this younger one, I'm trying to, you know, it's always leveraging. So she rides horses, but then I'm like, you have to use your own body a couple days a week.
Yeah.
And so, it's that way. But I think for me, I fell into professional sports as well as when I fell into playing in college. I wasn't groomed. Okay. I'm going to, you know, get a college scholarship. It literally was my senior year.
That's so cool.
When I started getting offers, and I had moved from the Caribbean my junior year, and that's when I got really involved with sports. And my friends were like, what are you going to go to college for? Like, meaning, how are you going to college on a scholarship?
Yeah.
And I was like, I know, right? For volleyball. I had way more offers for basketball because I had a good coach, so I advanced quicker. And I went to a BC camp, which I don't even know if they exist anymore. Doc Rivers was our guest athlete.
Wow.
It was weird.
Small world. That's so cool.
He was playing for the Atlanta Hawks, and I was in Carnesville, Georgia anyway. And the same thing with pros. So I think I fell into it. So also, I don't know that I had a lot of expectation.
Well, and I think, as crazy as it sounds, there are always those stories of athletes from the time that they're 10, 11 years old.
Yeah.
See, I wasn't like that either. I played basketball because it was fun.
Yeah.
But I wanted to be a fighter pilot. Like, I used to watch Top Gun religiously, and I was like, that's going to be me. I'm going to be Maverick. Can't wait.
You were probably too tall to fit into the rig, right?
Exactly. Yep. So by the time I was like in sixth grade, I was like 6'4", and my dad was like, hey, buddy, fighter pilots got to be 6 foot and below, so fighter pilots out. So I'm like, all right. And I started playing basketball more, but it wasn't until like my sophomore, junior year in high school where I was like, I'm actually really good at this.
Yeah.
And at that time, it just happened. I'm like the number one or two player in the country.
Yeah. That's almost better.
Yeah,
I think sometimes when we get young, very young people, and thinking like, oh, we can train it into you, we can get special help for you. I think for a young person to have the discovery, like you just said about yourself, where, wow, I'm pretty good at this, or this is fun to me. Yeah. And I think when parents especially parents that haven't played a sport, what they don't realize is that part of the process is that you should enjoy it,
mm-hmm.
even when it's hard.
Yeah.
But something about that, like, it's your thing.
Totally agree.
So I always encourage parents, like, why do you think being a champion athlete makes you a champion human? And I mean, how many athletes do we know that also the most interesting thing about them is when they're on the court or the field, and really to hang out with them as people, you're like, oh yeah, no.
No, I mean, and it's also the adjustment after they're done, their career.
Yeah.
And I think you're a tribute to that. Like, when the lights go off, how you stay relevant? How, like, are you a good person? Something really cool that Brad never asked, you were professional in so many other things. What about your first time, like, walking in a show? Like, that had to be crazy. I mean, how old were you? What was that?
Yeah, well, I was 18. And I think here we are again, bathing suit. Because remember, my size prohibited me from doing a lot of runway shows because you have to wear sample sizes.
Yeah.
So I could wear bathing suits. And I did a couple designers made clothes that were bigger.
Yeah.
But typically it was more like, you know, editorial work and things like that. You know, in a way, after being in sports, which you can't fake, there's elements of fashion which you kind of can fake.
Gotcha.
Like hair and makeup and like a pretty outfit and things like that. So I always looked at that as a job.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, because I was independent. I was providing for myself. And after my sophomore year, I gave up my scholarship and I paid to play and I made my own living with fashion because it kind of, when I did the economics, it made sense.
Yeah. But I mean, is there nerves involved with that? Or are you just kind of like
fashion?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you're going to be in front of a bunch of people, and I wasn't much of a extrovert that way, being 6'3", you know, you sort of almost chill back, way back all the time.
Yeah.
But I think what I learned, especially in fashion or taking pictures, was it'd be easier just to give them and do what they want and you'll get through it much quicker than if you're inhibited and overly shy.
I get that. Let's go back to like when you were playing in those first year, formative years of you turning professional. What was the moment that you're like, hey, I belong, or that like, I can do this?
You know, I think this is something I've talked a little bit about, but I've always struggled. What I loved about playing team sports was, in fact, being a part of something.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that in certain environments, I was separated because, you know, I sort of had these other dynamics I was dealing with. And all I did want to do in a certain way was do my job and also fit in. But I can remember playing certain tournaments, and I don't know if you've ever experienced this. There were literally days where I felt like I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. Like I couldn't play. Like even at practice, like you were like, yeah, I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if I'm capable or I have the talent to do it. Like you question yourself. And then every once in a while, there are times that you're playing and you are in that flow.
Yeah.
And everything is connected and the effortlessness that is. So I think in those moments were the ones where I'm like, I'm at the place that I should be. And quite frankly, even when it sucked, practices sucked, or I was going through periods of time where tournaments where you're not performing well, I still knew I was in the right place for me.
Gotcha.
I did know.
Yeah. I think that's awesome that you can say that every athlete feels like that. And there's a lot of people that have this false sense of arrogance or this false arrogance that, you know, well, no, I can do it. I don't, like, nah, man, like, it's okay every once in a while to be vulnerable. And I think my rookie year, I played with Michael Jordan. And
sorry.
And that's the thing about him was that his was never fake. It was,
oh, I know.
It was such a real arrogance at all time that, like, I look at, like, other players, like, even like a LeBron. Mm-hmm. You can see LeBron sometimes struggle with confidence. Like,
sure.
He's the greatest player maybe ever. One thing MJ never, it was never there.
I've seen, listen, so you can understand this. There's a Argentinian tennis player, Diego.
Yeah.
Okay, so guys like that, where they actually probably shouldn't be there, or guys, you saw this in basketball, maybe it's an Isaiah Thomas, or somebody maybe smaller, or MJ, late bloomer, right? Cut from the team your sophomore year.
Yep.
Here's the deal. They have a relationship with the sport that's deeper and an understanding of the game that's greater because they have to.
Yep.
And that is actually what gives them the confidence.
Yep.
My husband he surfs, right?
Yep.
And living with him is always interesting. I've asked him, is there ever a time you go out and you think you won't be able to? And he doesn't. His relationship is so intimate with his sport, and he's so clear that they actually have this confidence. So you'll see it in athletes that maybe are actually overachieving.
Yeah, and that's so funny you say that. I think that that's the line between, you know, great athletes and good athletes. Yep. I think that God can give you the ability, and if he does, you'll be great because you got given ability.
Right.
You look at like the Tracy McGrady's of the world, the Vince Carter's of the world, who are great because they were so talented.
Yeah.
But that next step up are the Michael Jordan's, LeBron's, Kobe's, Magic's, Larry Bird, that they have that, I'm that good.
Yeah.
And
well, they've also, it's been practiced into them.
Yeah.
Their relationship with the sport, and then on top of it, their physicality. Maybe Larry Bird is an exception of somebody who practiced it into themselves.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't his athleticism. It was his mental toughness and his real genuine relationship with the game.
Yeah. I mean, where do you put yourself with that? I mean, obviously your physical gifts kind of propelled you especially in beach volleyball.
I had a different a fuel that a lot of athletes use, which was probably a little bit of fear.
Good call.
And also, I understood very early that I was given an opportunity and a gift. Mm-hmm. And so what I was a worker. I was somebody who would train harder than anybody.
Yeah.
And I was going to earn it,
yeah.
Right? And also, I think the other thing I did was I would take cues from coaches and sort of figure out the way to turn that into physical motion. I don't know that I was like overly talented.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, okay, so that's what I need to do. Let me see if I can work that out.
Yeah,
I think I had those two things.
No, I mean, it makes total sense. Do you think that you kind of help the whole female movement that is going on right now? And maybe you don't give yourself a lot of credit for that, but I see it as that. I mean, there weren't a lot of sports where females could succeed and be on TV, get individual sponsorships. You know, do you feel like you deserve credit for where female athletes have been able to get and where they're going?
I think, you know, I've said that I'm on the timeline.
Yeah.
So, you know, you figure the athletes before me, right? The Billie Jean, the Navratilovas, you know, even Babe Dietrichson. I mean, like athletes before me. And then I come in the timeline where that culturally is the right time.
Gotcha.
So myself and Mia Hamm and Cheryl Swoops and then Lisa Leslie a little bit after that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the right, you know, people that got behind you. But what you realize is that I've said this a lot, and even a Michael Jordan or a LeBron James or like Chris, you know, Ronaldo, like the most famous athletes, is you're only occupying a space and you're representing something.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't you
personally.
It's you came around with the right equipment at the right time, and now you're occupying a space. And then, so how do you do that and do that well? And then other people will come and do that, and then maybe you represent other things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm just part of that story.
Yeah, I can see that. Something that no athlete can kind of avoid or get out, injuries.
Sure.
You know, for myself, I had 5 surgeries on my right knee. I was pretty much healthy, but just my right knee.
Yeah.
Broke my wrist once, but always broke my fingers. Like the injuries that you kind of struggled through, like, did you ever have any bad ones or you just?
Mine was my knee. And again, my training, I was pretty good about my training. So I got to avoid a lot of injuries, but I already have an artificial knee.
Really?
Yeah. I got one at 46 because I always could deal with the discomfort. I had the discomfort since I was 30.
Yeah.
But when I started to lose function, real function, I just went ahead and got it replaced.
And got it done.
And it's great.
See, that's so funny because I've always been told, because I tore my ACL and they took out my lateral meniscus. I tore my ACL when I was 21. I took a lateral meniscus when I was 28. And they were saying the same thing. They were like, mid-40s, you have to get your knee replaced. But then they said it only lasts 15 years, right?
Yeah, but I'm worried about my training and my ability to move and not compensate now. And so I'll deal with that then. It was great.
That's awesome. It's good to hear.
My husband went the same day and got his hip done.
See, I keep praying for stem cells.
But you got to train.
But you have to.
That's the key. You got to stay on it.
But I have to do so minimal because like I used to be like, all right, I'll swim.
Okay. Swimming is very boring.
It's very boring.
You know, we do an underwater pool training with weights. Like I have Joe Kim Noah was at my house this morning training.
Yeah.
And we do a bunch of deep water stuff, ballistic with weights. So you can be ballistic and be dynamic, but not crush your joints.
And I've always talked to people it's not when you're in the NBA. It's leading up to the NBA. It's high school and college. You do some of the stupidest stuff. Yeah. You grind your body down. So by the time you get to the NBA, guys get hurt. Like, oh, he's injury prone. But it wasn't the NBA. It's not the 82 games.
Well, it was the bad training. Also, like, the uninformed training, because we don't have access to such great trainers that, like, when you're a professional, you do.
Exactly. Like, you sprain your ankle or you hurt your knee in high school. Yeah. And you have an intern that comes from a local university that comes over and just puts ice on it every day. And there's nothing to it. So if you're going to make these, like, I remember when I was in high school playing AAU, we would play 5 games in a day. Like, it was nothing.
Yeah, sure.
And then get back in the car and drive back home.
Well, and not stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like literally.
And let your quads and all your hip flexors just grind up nice and tight.
Yeah. Like, walk into the gym, play this game and do that. It's not the NBA. It's not professional. You really grind yourself. And like, even in college, I'm sure you went through it. The amount of running and stupid.
Well, also what I have learned to really deal with is if you're playing, like, we have athletes that come and train with us, right? Mm-hmm. And if we go, hey, in your sport where you're playing or competing, you're doing these repetitive motions. So let's figure out a way to help you perform better, but not with those same repetitive motions, because you're already going to have to do that in practice and in games. Yeah. And so I think sometimes, and I'm sure it's going to move that way, where it's not about doing the same movements in your training as you have to do in your practices and your competition, because those you have to do anyway. Yeah. So we do a lot of things that are sort of unwinding or counter, but still will enhance your performance, but they're not the same exact motions.
Yeah. And I think medicine's come a long way from the regard of, you know, we had our strength coach in college, what was an Olympic trainer. Mm-hmm. Well, imagine, you know, you got people 6'11 trying to do snatches and power cleans from the floor.
Different mechanics,
mm-hmm. you know. An Olympic lifter typically is going to be between, you know, 5'6 and 6 foot tall.
And hypermobile.
Yeah, and his body, even doing squats.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a firm believer that very few NBA players should ever get a bar and just put weight on their back and do squats for a number of reasons. Because you have enough pounding going on of your legs and other things. Now, you can work with muscles actively another way.
Yeah.
But,
well, and plus most of us, especially when you're tall like that, don't actually squat correctly.
No, it's impossible.
So that's why I would throw somebody in 4 feet of water.
Yep.
So you have support and gravity. And there's so many things that you can do. Mm-hmm. But I agree. Like, when I see people that do CrossFit, I go, that's for people 5'7" and under.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if your body is elongated, even like bench press, to get a bar and just do bench press.
Yeah, it's silly.
I mean,
you're better off with two different dumbbells.
Yeah.
So your left and right are working equally. And also you only do your range of motion that you can do
stuff like that. And like, go all the way down to your chest. And then you start getting guys to get shoulder impingements back impingements.
You pay for macho,
no, you
by
do.
The way. You do. Like, as a female, right? We didn't have to deal with that. But I would always encourage younger athletes also to kind of explore really what's out there, because there's there's so much good training now to protect your body for the long, long run.
Yeah. And well, and you touched on it, and obviously that's the field you're in now. I'm a firm believer that there are so many fake trainers out there that just steal money from parents.
Yeah, it's not
because they convince their kids that if they do this. What is your take on that? I mean, obviously with you having 3 daughters, you need the proper help, but like, these fake trainers, it's out of control.
It's hard to, get through it, especially when you're not informed. Like, you or I, maybe we know certain things that other parents wouldn't know, but listen, I've had my own experiences. So there's resources, like, and I work with him like as a friend, but this is not my business. I have a friend named Kelly Starrett.
Mm-hmm.
He has a brand. He wrote a book called The Supple Leopard.
Okay.
And he has a thing called The Ready State. So there's guys like that out there. They're online. They give away a lot of stuff for free. If I was a parent, I would look at guys like that and I'd say, okay, is the person that's talking to me in my neighborhood talking to me about these types of things?
Yeah.
Because it's about mobility and about body function and things like that, not about a young person just lifting weights.
Mm-hmm.
It's about doing things to support the joints and the proper range of motion and flexibility so the kid can, you know, not get injuries based on either repetitive trauma or compensation or things like that. So I think that there is a big hustle around the emotional part that parents want their kids to go play in college.
Yes.
And I think parents have to ask themselves why. Is it because they didn't and they want to live through their kid? And do they want to ask their kid if that's what their kid wants to do?
Yeah.
Because as a parent, our job is to help them develop as human beings and to have relationships. And to, yes, you have to learn how to work hard in life, but it doesn't mean that you have to do it at sport.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that those are things also where parents have to really look, am I supporting my kid as a person?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're an athlete for a really short period of time and you're a human being sort of forever,
yeah.
at least while you're here.
Yeah.
So how do we help them develop and discover who they are? Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of parents sometimes are just like, get good grades and like do that sport. It's like, are you crazy?
I'm a firm believer in this, that school's not for everyone. Like you can try you can try to force a kid as much as you want. Yeah, you want your kid to do this. Like my youngest, love her to death. And I just said, as her parent, I can say this. She is not going to be a surgeon. She's not.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
But if it's something to do with arts, which she's passionate about, if it's something to do, she's a very kind person to do with, you know, I can see her being a teacher real easily because she loves interacting with humans. She loves kindness and doing that. Yeah. It's who she is.
And we need that those contributions too.
Totally agree.
You know, I think also people have to realize, I believe, I don't know the exact statistic, if it's like 70%, but if kids are in kindergarten right now, I think 70% of the jobs that they're going to do don't even exist right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, we all kind of need to get over it and the idea of like, okay, you're going to go do this. How about discover who you are? And yes, you will have to work hard.
Yeah.
No matter if you're a painter, you still have to have the discipline to go and paint.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about letting them off the hook and saying like, oh, don't worry. But it's about really trying to push them to go, well, what could I, what would I be excited to work hard at? Yeah. And, you know, again, what can I contribute?
Yeah. And I mean, going back to what you were saying earlier, a lot of my buddies now, once again, how old I'm getting, their kids are going to college.
Sure.
And they're trying to push them to go to basketball school. And I'm like, your son's not that good, man. Like, you see, like, they want him to go to, like, a Big Ten school or a Pac-12 school, ACC school. And I'm like, yeah, but if he goes to school, then he'll never play. And if he does play, it'll be his senior year. I said, why don't you let him go to a mid-major school that's not that good? By his sophomore year, he'll be playing minutes and then, like, actually play.
Get better.
Yeah, even the kids that don't play in the varsity sports, they still got to practice the same schedule.
Yeah.
They still got to go to class, do all the same stuff without the reward of getting a chance to actually play in the games.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I think parents, again, try to live through their kids, but also I have found, and I understand where it's tempting, is also then when they talk to their friends, oh, like they go to this school and that school. It's like, oh my gosh, get over it. You know what I mean? Like, they're at Princeton. Okay, I don't care. I mean, great. Well, I don't care. Like, I don't care.
There's a level of wealth now with, you know, the generation.
Well, the technology wealth.
Yeah. The 25 to 50-year-old wealth, I think, has kind of changed everyone's view. Yes, if you go to Harvard, you go to these schools, you're going to have a very successful life. But people look at the grinders that work at a Goldman Sachs, and they're like, I don't know if I want that, man. Like,
it's a tough gig.
Yeah, $200,000 to $300,000 a year.
It's a tough gig.
You know, being $125,000 in debt and then working 9 to 5 the rest of my life, I don't know. When I can, you know, come to California, you know, create a really impressive yoga studio, get the right following, get the right private training, make maybe a little bit less, but have an open schedule and live a good life.
Well, and I think that what you're saying is the most important thing is when we say someone is successful, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Oh, they're rich. Oh, they're famous. No, maybe that's not it. So success is something else. And I think the problem is too, is now with the external of, you know, social media and all this stuff is I think everyone thinks, oh, getting attention will make me be, you know, successful. And therefore, if I'm successful, I'll feel happy. And I think they don't realize that that is a very tricky thing to navigate, that if you can actually build your own real life with people that are like, okay, whatever that you do, I'm here, we're friends. And also to keep learning as a person, that generally ends up working out better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to know that at 20.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
and you made a great point about, and you go through this, being famous is not always easy. Being forward facing as a person, it's tough because as many people that do like you, there are just many that hate you.
Yeah.
And
it should never be the end result. right? Like you played basketball because you wanted to, and as a result, then you get attention.
Yeah.
So if you know, the notion of being famous, like, okay, if you're someone like Beyonce, for example, the most famous, right? Yeah. Some of those guys, it's like, yes, but ultimately they were still singing and dancing in their basement because they were excited about it. And here's the byproduct. Mm-hmm. But now with social media, that ends up being like, that's the goal. And they don't really understand what that is. Mm. And so I think it's, and it's silly. It's unsustainable. You can't be, you know, important and famous, whatever the hell that means, forever. So then you're going to chase it and you're dead because that reeks also of desperation.
It's terrible. It's
so if you're doing stuff that at least you're turned on by, then you're starting from a good place, mm-hmm. you know?
No, I mean, I remember when I was in New York, we were on some terrible, terrible teams in New York. I mean, bad teams and all the media and doing this.
Oh, they hammer you. They're tough over there.
Oh, they're tough. I mean, getting booed in the streets, booed in the arena.
It's tough.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
And it taught me a lot to have really thick skin, because to that point in my career, never happened.
Yeah.
Because I've been on successful teams or I played in markets that weren't as tough as that. Being hated and being disliked by fans, it's tough, man.
It hurts.
It hurts.
Well, I think what you tell people too is like, you can't believe like, you're so great, you're the best. Because you don't want to believe you suck.
Yeah.
So you have to choose. And it's usually that you better be clear with yourself how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Because whether it's great or bad, you're going to have to weather some of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are a lot of players now that they're obsessed with social media.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of guys that, I won't mean name names, but a lot of guys that have fake accounts.
Oh.
And they'll go through, even on their main account, and they'll go through and they'll look at other accounts mm-hmm. on their fake accounts, and it just consumes them because they want to see what everyone's saying about them.
Yeah, that's a rabbit hole. It's a rabbit hole. You got to let that go, man.
And I mean, really good players, and I'm like, man, you're one of like the top 30 players in the world.
Well, it's an addiction, though.
Yeah,
I mean, they have it structured like that on purpose. So I think it's almost like you have to almost consciously say, I call it the breadbasket decision. Like if I go to dinner and I go, okay, when they bring the breadbasket, I'm not going to eat it. Because mm-hmm. if I don't decide before they put the breadbasket down, right, like I'll eat it because who doesn't like bread?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with social media. I think you have to decide like this is where it lives in my life and you have to stick to it. Because if it's just sort of like you float and go through it, it's so addicting that you don't really have a chance against it.
We'll go back to sports real quick. We have such a great conversation about everything else. Your coach.
Mm.
What would you say out of all the coaches that you've had and come across, who had the biggest impact on you as a player and person?
I had a basketball coach in high school, Dean Soles, that used to like take me to barbecue and church and tell me to get along with my mother. And he's just a really cool guy. And then my coach in college had the most profound, Cecil Renaud,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Renaud. Because, you know, after you coach for 25 years, then you go back and get your teaching doctorate because that's normal.
Yeah.
She's just a badass lady who taught me about personal accountability. She's actually one of the most entertaining public speakers I've ever seen. She really drilled home about personal accountability. And she also helped me navigate when I was modeling and playing ball at the same time. Oh. She never made me choose. She said, okay, we're going to make a deal and how it's going to work for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
What she showed me that was very powerful was I will care for you first as a person.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about you as an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And just straight volleyball, I had a coach named Gary Sato who taught me a lot about volleyball as a pro.
Yeah.
But these people changed my life. You know, my college coach changed the trajectory of my whole life. And so,
cool. So
I think it's sort of like a great teacher or mentor where it's like, you don't know that it's going in, but it's going in. You know, I went to college at 17. She probably like, this kid, they say hello, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a little bit like a parent.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 10 years later, they're like, you know, when you said that and you're like, you heard that,
yeah.
you know?
And it means so much to you.
It means everything, so.
That's true.
Yeah.
Of all the accolades, all the awards, what was the award that you received and you were like, oh man, that's actually really, really cool. And even now looking back on it, like maybe not even the moment when you got it,
yeah.
but looking back on it,
You know, a few years in a row as the most offensive player. And I think I really appreciated that because I worked really hard. And I remember thinking, you know, it was based on statistics, mm-hmm. which I needed at that time. So it wasn't that I didn't recognize at the time, because again, I never really let awards impact me that much. But doing that a couple years in a row felt really good to me, like as some kind of affirmation. And it was just very black and white. I think it's just a metric to go like, okay, that training and that, was that working? Yes, it was working, mm-hmm. you know.
And then Florida State, how often do you get back to Tallahassee?
Not very often. I was back there. I probably go like once every 10 years. It's, you know, listen, like at some point, I'm a person who's always moving forward.
Yeah.
And I love Florida State and I'll always, you know, where I can support it. But sometimes going back, you're like, yeah, this is a different part of my life.
And it's so overwhelming. That's even for me. When I go back home,
yeah,
I'm from Bloomington where IU is. So when I go back home, I try to knock everything out at once. So see my parents, go to a game, go to alumni events. Then I'm home for like 4 days and I'm, you know, stay with my dad until 2 o'clock in the morning talking to him. Then my mom gets up at 6 o'clock for coffee. So I'm sleeping like 4 hours a night.
Yeah.
So by the time when I'm home, I'm just exhausted.
Well, and it's emotional.
It is.
Because it's also how life changes and moves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that that is a real reference when you go there and you're like, oh, okay.
What's the coolest place you lived? I mean, could you live?
Oh, well, I grew up in the Virgin Islands, which is great. I live on Kauai part-time, which is pretty spectacular. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Hawaii is special. You know, it's just special in a lot of places. Like they talk about, they have a word called mana, which means like the energy from mm-hmm. the place. There's a lot of mana.
All right. So now, Gabrielle, life's been good. Everything's going great.
It is?
Right?
Oh, yes, it is.
What are you working on now?
Well, my number one job is obviously my family. You know, my girls are at a pivotal time, my younger two, and just to make sure that they have the best launching pad they can have mm-hmm. You know, try to be the best partner I can to my husband, who... you know, I always say Laird is like the best partner, but he also like, you don't get to phone it in.
Yeah.
He isn't going to like, uh-huh, yes, dear. That's not going to work. It's like, you have to, you're on.
Yeah.
And then we have businesses. We have XPT, which is some of the training I was telling you about. There's breathing and heat and ice and mobility, but then there's a pool element to it that's excellent. And we actually have a food business, Laird Superfood, that is weirdly thriving. Like I've had other businesses, like, listen, I've been around a long time. Like you have to try different things and some do medium and some lose. And this one is really, you know, get into businesses that people use the product every day.
Yeah.
It's like caffeine is like legal drugs, right? Mm-hmm. But this is based on a habit of Laird's, a genuine one for 25 years. And then, you know, the business of, I have a podcast and then also the business of each of us separately. You know, we have an attorney, but I got rid of all managers and agents about 9 years ago.
Yeah.
We learned that our two biggest businesses are ones that we started.
Yep.
And then yes, the dividends, the return will be huge. However, sometimes it's really important to understand things for yourself and take control, because also, listen, the money that athletes bring in at the peak of their, you know, earning potential, it will shift. Yeah. So if they have other interests or other things that they can do, but you got to be involved.
Yeah.
You can't expect other people to babysit your passions for you.
And you'll fail. I mean,
absolutely.
You'll fail. Like you will, especially in business, because we're not groomed to run businesses.
Right.
But even people that are groomed to run businesses,
they fail. That's right. You have to fail to have the big one.
What is the superfood thing you were talking about?
It's insane. We have like, I don't know how many SKUs we have, but we have a vegan, and we're not vegan, by the way, but the company is vegan. So we have organic, high altitude, low acidic, all coffee, all of our coffee. And then we have multiple vegan creamer products, original, unsweetened. We have a combination InstaFuel products where you just add hot water. If you're traveling, we've got turmeric. We have cacao flavor. We have hydrate products.
Huh.
So all you do is freeze dried coconut with Aquamin, a bioavailable mineral.
Yeah.
So you actually really do recover if you're being active. And then we have a bunch of other products in the pipeline.
That's so cool. Anything else you want to add?
I think if, you know, if you're talking about people who are in sports or in, you know, think, you know, they're involved in sports at the beginning of their sports career, I always say that you're right. You're in a miracle. And sometimes you don't realize it. Mm-hmm. And so if you can, and it isn't to stop and be like, oh, I'm in the miracle, but it's also to enjoy the miracle and not to take it for granted, because the problem is they're also around other athletes who are in the miracle. Yep. And so they all think that's how it is. And it's a really sort of sweet moment, I think, when you, it's hard to play professional sports or college sports or even high school sports, mm-hmm. but it's really special.
Yeah.
And so just to enjoy that simultaneously to, you know, when you walked into the gym for practice, you got that weird feeling in your stomach because you knew you were about to get your ass kicked. You remember that? Yeah. Like, you're like, oh, here we go.
Yeah, here we go.
Even in that, it's just to really appreciate it.
That's awesome. I mean, honestly, this is one of the coolest interviews I've done. Just like your knowledge of the world and how you've embraced everything and just the journey that you've been on is actually really inspiring.
When you live long enough, maybe you have a few 5 minutes to share stuff.
Gabby, I want to thank you for coming in and telling your story on Rookie Year with us. You can follow Gabby on IG at Gabby Reese, or on Twitter at Gabby Reese. You can find more info on HiX and XPT on Gabby's website, GabrielleReese.com. I'm your host, Jared Jeffries. You can follow me on IG and Twitter at Modern Fishing TV. Thank you for listening. Thank you to DCP Entertainment. Listen and subscribe to Rookie Year on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows. For more information, go to dcpofficial.com.
Next time on Rookie Year, Corey Brewer.
Man, my rookie year was tough because I went from winning 2 national championships to winning like 15, 18 games, whatever we won. That was. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's probably one of the worst years of my life. Cold in Minnesota.
You were in Gainesville before, rocking, winning national.
I was depressed. So I'm not going to lie to you. The hardest thing for me was just losing every night. Like, I never lost in my life like that. So every night we were getting smacked. So it was like, get on a plane, then you got to play a back-to-back. And, like, back then we played a lot of back-to-back. So, man, the losing, it really can get to you if you're not used to it.